We'll try to keep the time. First of all, Nicholas, congratulations to you and your baby sister, Olga, and all the team of Capital Link for organizing this really special event, which is also much needed, and it's also in a very timely fashion. I'm going to talk today about the economic crisis that we seem to be in, that seems to be... You want me to speak in Greek or English? Huh? Okay, okay. For those who don't speak fluent English, I have some Greek stuff on the board. The rest can just learn some Greek from what's on the board. So I'm going to talk about the four basic causes of this recent decline in economic activity, this recent crisis that we're facing. The first is income inequalities and inequalities in the wealth on a global scale. The second is the geopolitical disturbances that are upsetting economic activity. The third is what I would call the hyper-debt situation of the global economy, not just the Greek. What's happening in Greece seems to be also happening at a global scale. And the fourth is that there's a tendency for winners to take all, and I'll briefly make a note of that. First of all, on the income inequality side, the richest 1% of our population holds about 45% of global wealth, and the 62 richest billionaires hold as much wealth as 3.3 billion of our fellow citizens on the planet. So 62 billionaires have as much wealth as 3.3 billion fellow citizens. Now, in 2010, we had the 388 wealthiest people holding 50% of the wealth. In 2011, we had 177 families. In 2012, 159. In 2013, 92. In 2014, 80. And in 2015, 62 families owning that wealth. So one will say, so what? You know, some people are much more productive than others, and they deserve to hold such wealth. But it causes a lot of alienation. It causes a lot of anxiety. It causes a lot of insecurity. It causes a lot of stress when you have such inequality. And there is a tendency, because the bulk of the people are poor and many of them unemployed, to tend to vote for more populist parties, for more left-winging, left-wingers. We saw that in Greece, where we had a party that was only 4% just a few years ago. It came out in the last elections with about 36%. So the more you have this tendency and concentration to fewer hands, the more you might have to face left-winging parties. Of course, this is nothing new. This has happened from time immemorial, this concentration of capital. In 840 before Christ, the lawmaker of Sparta, Lycurgus, had to really institute a socialist system because it says the properties were concentrated in just a few hands in Laconia. The same thing about 580 before Christ with Solon. He had to face a rebellion in Greece and he had to make all the debts free. But he said, if you're a big reformer, when you do the reforms, you have to leave the country because people cannot take as much and they will bother you for the rest of your life. So both these ancient Greek reformers had to really split. Second is geopolitical disturbances. They cause a lot of friction in international trade and investment, and I'll just mention a few of them. The first one, of course, is the rise of crazy jihadism and the insecurity it causes to all of us. You're never really sure if your kids are safe in school or whether you're flying a plane, no crazy has planted a bomb. The second is the rise in the number of the so-called failed states, states where lawlessness prevails, and lawlessness can also be exported. Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Yemen, parts of Mali, parts of northern Nigeria, and so on. The third is the destruction of Syria and the huge tsunami of refugees it has created. It's in the millions, not in the tens of thousands, with huge human and economic costs. There are some people who blame Greece for not being adequate in hosting these millions, but you know, it was not Greece that created the problem in the first place. The fourth geopolitical challenge is the one in Russia and Ukraine that has put Russia outside the mainstream of the Western free commerce countries, and the sanctions do have a major effect on what has been happening in global growth or lack of growth. And the final is the South Sea development in China. You know that China has been in loggerheads with a number of countries in its borders, namely Vietnam, Philippines, Taiwan, Japan, because it's claiming huge chunks of the China Sea that other countries think it's theirs. So various reefs have now been made into full islands and to full military Chinese bases, and I think it has not surfaced as a major problem, but keep an eye on it. The third major challenge is what I would call global hyper-debtedness. You know, global GDP is about $80 trillion. If you add Russia and China and America and Germany and every other country, it's about $80 trillion. Global debt is about $240 trillion. Now, to cover payments and to service such global debt, you need a lot of EBITDA. But the global economy is not producing a lot of EBITDA to cover such debt. We had about 70 years of full global peace, no really Third World War. We weathered a lot of storms. The debt started moving from higher and higher levels, and it's now at a level which is not serviceable. In the past, you had a lot of global wars, and that would write off a lot of debts by itself. A lot of people got killed, and you started from zero. Now we have had and enjoyed and blessed with such peace, but that has created this problem of debt, which is not easily manageable. And this is the reason why you see the crisis enveloping. For example, the central banks are bringing interest rates to 0% or negative. And you would have thought that with 0%, more money would circulate in the economy. And the question is, why isn't more money circulating in the economy at zero or even negative interest rates? The answer is that the banks that have access to this cheap funding from central banks have to lend money to somebody who's already overdebted. So you give money to me, but I owe money to everybody. And I have to give credit to one of my clients, but he owes also money to everybody. And he has to give credit to another client, and he also owes a lot of money to everybody. So the money has to circulate among companies and corporates and individuals who are already over-indebted. This is the reason, and I think central bankers have still don't understood, have not understood the problem yet, that money is not circulating at a faster pace. If you go to Kuwait today, a country that is blessed with a lot of oil, there's not enough credit there for the same reasons. First of all, they have to finance the jihadist war, and they spend a lot of money. Number two, the price of oil has gone down, so their reserves have gone down. And third, people in every area are still very much in debt, so this is not a problem that's going to be able to solve itself easily. And the problem of debt is without considering the social security debt that a lot of countries have to face. Most social security systems cannot finance themselves anymore. In the United States, the debt of the social security system, the deficits between what is expected to be paid and what is expected to be collected, is about $34 trillion. It's more than much more than the government debt. And the money that is spent is typically spent to keep alive people in the last 3 months before they actually pass away. It's the last effort to keep somebody alive that causes tremendous amount of strain on that system. And the last is the winner-takes-all society, which means that those who are winners in every sector really get the bulk of the benefits. In terms of countries, the winners are the United States, Great Britain, Switzerland, and Germany. And they are countries that have political stability, independent public administration that functions on its own. Even if a government is weak, the public administration can function nicely. The justice system is strong and credible. They have modern facilities and a more cosmopolitan approach to things. If you are a foreigner, you can not feel a stranger in these countries. You can pretty much mix with the crowds easily. They are the countries that have the preference of the global investment community, but still, in a crisis where everybody sinks, they pay a price too. But the price they pay is much less than what is happening in other parts of the world. This is a situation that I don't think is going to change very, very easily. This is why the stock markets have declined so much in the past few months. Olivier Blanchard, the chief economist of the IMF, said that he thought it was a herd instinct, and you know, once somebody sells, he causes a panic to everybody else. I'm afraid that's not the case. It's the case of the hyper-indebtedness that we described before. And that's going to continue to be at play. This is why the price of oil has fallen. It's not just a matter of oversupply. It's also a matter of a weak demand and energy-efficient systems, of course, but it's a matter of weak demand. This is why agricultural commodities have declined, you know, by 20% in the last 15 months or so. The price of copper and, of course, the rates for Greek and international dry bulk carriers. The reason is partly oversupply of ships, but partly because of lack of demand. There's not that explosive growth we've seen in the past. And one has to keep an eye on what's happening to the European banking system. What went on with the Deutsche Bank? Where is the big hole and who is doing what to address that hole? Will Russia be able to service its debt smoothly in 2017? These are key points for you, I think, to consider. How strong or how weak are Chinese banks' balance sheets? That's also a very major problem, and the Chinese manage typically to hide the problems, but I think they're there. And what has happened to global loan-to-value ratios? If every asset value has been weakening, then the loan-to-value ratios are also going to be very much weakened. On the plus column, we have the human desire to expand continuously. As Aristotle described 25 centuries ago, people may satiate themselves with good foods or good clothes, but they never satiate themselves with wealth. So they continuously strive to create more wealth. We may have countries like Iran, Russia, and Cuba re-entering the global economy, and that would increase demand. We have a continuous improvement in global technology, and that improves productivity all the time. So, and I'm done. We have faced much worse problems in the past. We've faced world wars, bubonic plagues, atomic balance of terror. So I think the way that we have global problems, we're going to be able to have global solutions. There are plenty of brains in the world that can help us get the problems around, and plenty of brains in this room as well. So I'm sure we will make it. Thank you very much, Nicolas.